Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Vietnam Innovators. I'm your host, Hal. Today, I have a dear old friend. He's one of the first guests on our, not our podcast, but actually our editorial pages, some almost 7 years ago.
Eight years ago, yes.
Well, it's good to have you back.
Thank you.
Today, you're representing Journey of the Senses, which is a company name that not a lot of people are familiar with, but makes a lot of sense if they've been to one of your businesses. So why don't we just start with naming the five businesses, and that'll give you a little context into the podcast today.
Sure. So the five businesses we have, Journey of the Senses is the overall name of the company, and we started with the Dining in the Dark restaurant, Noir Dining in the Dark.
Okay.
And we have Blanc restaurants, then we have La Hua, it's a flower shop, and we have Noir Spa and Duru Sang.
Okay.
It's a vegetarian restaurant.
And all those five are in the same alley on
Haibachung Street. Same lane. Yeah. Each time when there's a house available, we try to grab it.
And organize
a new business concept. Yeah.
Okay.
So we have been, as you mentioned, indeed, 8 years ago, we started with Noir Dining in the Dark.
Yeah.
And pretty much every year after, we opened another business.
Fantastic.
And well, the last one, Duru Sang, actually we opened during the pandemic.
Okay.
Yeah, this
Fantastic.
Was a bold move as well, but I'm quite glad we did that.
Great. Well, if you haven't been to any of them, check them out. If you've been to one, maybe go to the other four. Noir, that's the first one, Journey of the Senses. Thank you. We're going to start with some rapid-fire questions just to get the podcast a bit warmed up before we get into the main of the podcast today. These questions are really short, and the answer should be short as well, so keep them nice and tight. They're less than 10, 20 seconds. Kind of thing. All right, so first question for you, Yerm. What brought you to Vietnam?
Internship.
What's your proudest achievement in Vietnam so far?
I think to start my businesses and to have them still up and running.
What's a Dutch product that you'd like to introduce to Vietnam?
Ooh, stroopwafel.
Stroopwafel.
Yeah, oh, you know?
Oh, yeah, I know that. Yeah, okay, it's the waffle with the honey or whatever syrup,
I
think.
It's a really thick syrup, sugar syrup in between.
Okay, let's talk about that later.
Yeah.
What's a Vietnamese product that you'd like to introduce to the Netherlands?
Bun cha. Yeah, there might be plenty of zeo nep gum.
Zeo nep gum?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I don't even know what that is. If you had to explain to a five-year-old what noir is, how would you do it?
To a five-year-old? Well, it's a restaurant in the dark. Service staff is blind and visually impaired. Guests don't know what they're going to eat. You focus more on taste and smell. Very exciting experience.
What's the biggest lesson you've learned running a restaurant business?
Biggest lesson? Maybe just do it. Indeed, go in with passion and motivation. It has been a big journey.
What motivates you?
I think the people we work with.
What's a recent favorite movie, TV show, book, or podcast?
Well, I really enjoyed Beef on Netflix. It was quite an interesting, exciting series to see. Currently, I'm reading the Thursday Murder Club from a British writer about four elderly people who are solving murders.
Okay.
Yep. Very good. Exciting.
On a Sunday at 10 a.m., where would you be and what would you be doing?
I may be in a coffee shop reading a book, drinking a latte da.
You don't sound like a very stressed out restaurateur. You sound very relaxed.
Yeah.
Final and last question here. What's your favorite Vietnamese word or phrase?
I think lu su bu is quite funny.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you, Yerm, for those quick fire questions. We're going to get into today's podcast. Before we delve into the main discussion of here, we talked about the five businesses you own all under the Journey of the Senses kind of main umbrella business. We'd love to hear more about that, but also how your journey was to Vietnam and what factors brought you here. You mentioned an internship, but I'm sure there's much more than just the internship and reasons why you stayed here. So why don't we start with that?
Yeah, I came to Vietnam in 2004. For an internship, indeed, on behalf of the hotel school in The Hague. I did a management internship in the Metropole Hotel in Hanoi.
Okay.
After that, I got job offers in Vietnam, and I decided to stay. So that has been already since, close to 20 years already.
And that was, what year was that then?
That was 2004.
So you were an intern at the Metropole in Hanoi,
one of the
iconic hotels here, and you kind of came in with open eyes, not really knowing what to expect.
I was actually planning on going back to a master degree back in the Netherlands, and I had my mind at the time on South America, actually. But when I did my internship here in Vietnam, I really, really fell in love with the country and everything in it. And it was just very nice to come back. And, well, I've never left. So, yeah.
And what factors led you to starting the business? I'm sure you mentioned Noir started 8 years ago, was it?
Yes.
And so there's about a 10-year gap.
Yes.
15-year gap there.
Well, we worked for some big five-star hotels in Hanoi, in Ho Cham, here in Saigon. Did the opening of a few hotels, and well, at a certain time, me and my business partner, we thought it would be nice to start a business on our own.
Yeah.
So something in the line of hospitality made perfect sense. Something not along the line of 13 in a dozen restaurants, yes, but then something with a special concept. So we quickly came to the idea of working with people with disabilities, blind and visually impaired service staff, in a restaurant, it's never done in Vietnam before, and it became Noir Dining in the Dark.
Okay, phenomenal. Yeah, it's definitely one of the more iconic restaurants here. So congratulations on all the history and achievements you guys have made. Go check it out. I go regularly. Tell us the story behind it, but also what inspired you to start it, because you mentioned it's one of the first concepts of its kind, blind service staff.
That's yes.
Did you ever work with blind people before?
And no.
And what sparked the idea to integrate this kind of social cause into the business?
The Dining in the Dark concept is nothing new. That started in 1999 in a restaurant in Zurich in Switzerland. Mm. That was founded by four blind people.
Okay.
And one of them a priest. They started a restaurant in the dark, and that became quite a big hit. Quite a few other bigger cities in Europe, mainly in Europe, started opening restaurants with this concept. And then eventually it spread over to Asia as well. There's a few other restaurants here in the region. And we visited one of them, my business partner and I, and we thought it would be amazing to do that, bring that actually to Vietnam.
What did you enjoy so much about that experience?
It's difficult to describe how dark is. If you sit in a dining room with absolutely nothing to see, you don't even see the hand in front of your face. It is absolutely absence of light. Mm. Your senses automatically redirect. You focus way more on taste, smell, hearing. Mm. Suddenly the cap of a water bottle is suddenly quite a sharp sound.
Yeah.
People eating, people walking around. It is amazing to just focus suddenly on the other senses. And then you really know how hard actually it is distinguishing the difference between chicken and pork or even fish and meat is very, very hard.
Yeah. Okay.
Sometimes broccoli is easy because it has the shape, but when you puree it, it gets that generic vegetable taste. It's super hard to really taste that in the dark.
Yeah.
And then that is actually the guest experience. It is just a very interesting experience, humbling as well, to realize how much we actually focus on our sight and how lucky we should be able to see. That's for the guests. But then for our service staff, they are blind and visually impaired. So for them, it is,
How did they feel about going into hospitality? And I can't empathize with a blind person a lot, but just because I don't know what it is. You know, I can't as much as I can. But what are the reactions to some of the more young staff, let's say, who enter the business? Why are they doing it? How do they feel about venturing into this kind of workplace?
A blind or visually impaired person is living their life like this. So for them, this is pretty normal.
Yeah.
They don't know anything else. Mm. The spectrum of blind and visually impaired, it starts actually being capable of seeing. But as soon as you start glasses, you already start entering actually that spectrum of visual impairment. Okay. And that can then be all to the end of being incapable of seeing, but there's a big spectrum in between. Mm-hmm. And some of them can still see a little bit. Some of them have a reaction to light. They won't see colors, but they can still see shadows, dark and light. Mm. Some people can see with one eye or with the corner of one eye. There's a big spectrum. Mm. So for most of them, it is just, they're used to this. A sighted person will always think it is very hard for a blind person not being capable of seeing, but they use their other senses in a heightened way. About 83% of our senses is sight, if they all work properly.
So it sounds like it's a workplace that's quite inclusive, and
yes.
I guess you could say their coworkers can relate to some of their challenges.
Yes.
Is that common practice in a place like Vietnam or even in the Netherlands where you work?
Well, it's very uncommon to have a team with people with disabilities really in the front line. Mm-hmm. There's indeed a lot of admirable social enterprises out there where they work with people who have a disability, but they're often not interacting with the guests in the front line. And that is where we make a difference. The staff, blind, visually impaired, we have deaf and hearing impaired as well, they are really working with the guests. They take the orders, serve the food. So when you are coming as a guest, you get the interaction with them directly. And that is rare, let's say. It's not that common. There's companies where there is people with disabilities, but you often they're behind the scenes or back of house. You don't see them. And we really like to see that their disadvantage become advantage.
How does that translate into commercial and business success? Because a lot of business owners might feel like, oh, we want the best team possible.
Yes.
Sometimes that just means not hiring people with disabilities.
Yes.
Now, it sounds like you've kind of flipped that a little bit. And very special business, of course.
The whole concept is working with people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. Indeed. That is, Noir Dining and Dark has blind staff. Blanc Restaurant has a team of deaf and hearing impaired staff. It's the concept of the restaurant. So in a way, it's indeed a commercial concept. But at the other hand, these people, they do want to have a job. Mm-hmm. Unemployment rate for blind people in Vietnam is about 93%.
So 93%. It's very unemployment.
Hard. Yeah, depends who you include. Do you just focus on blinds? Do you include the hear of the visually impaired? That number is depends how large you want to how bad you want to make the number look actually, but obviously very little opportunities. Indeed, what you say, a lot of people just don't take that step of hiring people with a disability, and that is quite sad because what I said earlier, the 83% of our sites, that is what we have. There's only 17% left for us for the other four senses. But a blind person obviously has still 100% sense. So that gap of that 70-80% that has to be filled up with hearing, with touch, with smell, there's a lot of things they can actually do way better than we can. And that is what we never really focus on, what they still can do. We often focus on what they can't. Ooh, it might be hard if you can't see. It will be hard for me if I can't see. But then we forget that they are indeed living like this. They're very motivated because there are very little opportunities elsewhere. So as soon as you start hiring a person with disability, they really want to perform and to show that there's actually, in essence, nothing wrong with them.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because individual motivation, there's that. Now, as a team, I'd love to kind of dig into the numbers and a little bit. And by that, I mean, like, what's the average turnover of a place like Noir in terms of staff turnover? Because in the restaurant business, let's say, for a normal restaurant, people come and go very quickly.
Certainly.
Could be a couple months, could be a couple days.
That's true.
And sometimes that's related to the company environment. Do you find your staff sticking along for the ride quite a bit? And have you had staff stay since day one?
Oh, yes, perhaps? Absolutely. Yeah. We still have people from the opening days, indeed, in all segments, both in front of house service, in the disability team, also in the kitchen, indeed. Turnover in restaurants is notoriously quite high, especially when you reach that period of debt. People wait for the bonus, and then there might be a chance that they move on, want to learn something new. It's totally fine, of course. Every once in a while, you have to do something new. I support that. As long as people get a better position after, I'm totally fine with that. In our team, with the people with disability, the deaf and the blind, the turnover is low because they have the job, seems they like it, they stick with us.
And it seems like there's also fewer workplaces
that can
support them.
Indeed.
Have you seen a shift since the 8 years that you started the business, though, would you say?
Well, there have been a few other people trying dining in the dark restaurants as well. I'm not sure if there is more people working with blind people in hospitality. And with deaf people, I know of several places in the country, Da Nang, Hoi An, here in Saigon as well, where there is coffee shops, restaurants, where they work with people with hearing impairment, indeed. But in hospitality in general, there's not a lot of options. No classic work options in Vietnam for people with blind or visual impairment is massage.
How do you see that evolving, let's say, over the next few years? Do you see businesses accommodating that more? If yes, if no, why? I'd love to hear your ideas.
The social entrepreneurial movement in Vietnam is quite strong. There's a lot of small businesses with a focus on social entrepreneurship. And then it's often in agriculture or in hospitality, tourism, but then often focusing on people with disadvantaged youth or rural backgrounds, working with sustainable products, people working with companies where there's people with disabilities, that is still a little bit more rare. But it's definitely evolving. There's a lot happening in this in Vietnam. We're a member of Mekong Tourism as well, and you can with there's a lot of businesses with a social entrepreneurial focus there.
Would you say that your social focus, which is in your case especially such an important part of your business,
yes,
has it contributed or been the leading factor even for the commercial success?
Oh, definitely.
Of Journey of the
Absolutely,
Senses?
Because it's the concept. Mm. Dining in a dark restaurant, a restaurant where we ask people to order their meals in sign language, that is the concept of the restaurant indeed. We still really want to focus on the quality of products and service as well. Having a restaurant, our guests are coming to have their tummies filled, of course. So
sure,
it needs to be still a restaurant experience. Yeah. But since we work with the social entrepreneurial mindset, I think the integrity level is even higher.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so we still really fun to focus on providing our guests with that's a genuine professional hospitality.
How does one go about recruiting such a diverse team? Like this, because you not only have visually impaired, you have at the other venue, it's the opposite, hearing impaired.
Indeed.
How do you go about hiring your staff?
When we start,
or is that your secret sauce? Right?
No. It is fine, of course. In the beginning, we kept it indeed secret because normally, when you would start a restaurant, you would look for a location, you start renovating, you implement kitchen, you start hiring a chef. Normally, that would be one of the first to hire in the team. He starts working on menus and recruiting his team, and then slowly down, you start hiring a few months before the opening a service team.
Mm.
We completely swapped out of that around and started hiring the service team. We even We even had not a location. We just rented a room of a friend who had an office. We actually, when we had all the interviews done and dusted and contract signed, we had staff, but we had no location, not really a concept, not really a clear idea. But then we worked out that we found a perfect location and started making the team. So of making the concept and the restaurant, but the team was there already. Normally you would indeed hire the team last because we definitely felt that, of course, they had no experience. They had to be trained. So we focused with the team in the beginning, 3 months training. We designed a training program 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, going through hospitality for blind people.
Was there a playbook for that in Vietnam?
No. None of the staff, the blind staff, had actually job opportunities before. So working like a day job, waking up and go to work, that was all new for them.
How did you introduce, did they even believe you? Like when you first approached
them? They were a little bit skeptical in the beginning.
How are they skeptical?
They know that there's not opportunities out there for them. And they know that it might be a bit challenging in a way. But at the other hand, they're very motivated. And I think that is then the secret there, where if you don't have the skills, you can learn them. But if you don't have motivation, motivation is hard to learn.
So you find that their motivation is just off the charts compared to the average?
Yes. Of course, we still, when you hire a person who works in going to work in a restaurant, of course, they need to be a bit more social, a bit more outgoing. They shouldn't be shy wallflowers, of course. They need to be a little bit more comfortable with talking and working. Teamwork was absolutely not an issue because they're a very close-knit community. Motivation was absolutely high. So the skills, they were like sponges. They absorbed very quickly.
You mentioned one thing. They're familiar with one another in their that community of visually impaired or hard of hearing.
Yes.
So it's easy to work together.
Yes. And when we started, we contacted a couple of organizations and within weeks, we had a whole team together.
Weeks?
Yeah.
Okay.
If we now do recruitment, often we can just go back to the team themselves and ask, do you know anyone of your friends or buddies?
Do you have any hiring problems?
Not really. No,
that's actually quite surprising to hear for a restaurant owner.
No, I mean, it actually hiring staff in the front of house, sighted staff, that is always a bit more challenging than.
Because it's hard for them to perhaps adapt with the team around them.
True, indeed. And that took in the beginning a little bit of time to make the team very nice. Yeah, be a cohesion. The deaf team themselves, that was a cohesive group. The blind team was a cohesive group. The sighted and the hearing people. But then to make that blend, that took a bit of time.
Okay.
But, yeah, well, if we have now a company outing, we bring everybody along. We go to a resort in Nha Trang, for instance, and we have great events and team-building activities at the beach with the blind and the deaf and everybody together. And yeah, sometimes we need to do a bit of sign language translation or you need to explain it more.
Are you fluent in sign language now?
I'm not really fluent. Okay. Some of the members in my team pretty much are.
Okay.
I know the basics about restaurant words, restaurant jargon in sign language. Yeah. I know. At the other end, if you know the alphabet, the sign alphabet, of course, you can just spell out words.
Right. Phenomenal. Did you find, you mentioned hiring the team took just a matter of weeks. And of course, you've had decades at this point of hospitality experience. You're not that old, though. Yeah. I'm just wondering, do you find the number of staff required to operate your kind of businesses to be more than the average?
Yes.
It is.
Yes.
And why is that?
No, because we actually have two sets of service teams. Okay. When you would normally go to, let's say, a regular restaurant, you would have a service team who is doing everything from A to Z. They will welcome you, they will seat you, they will bring the menu, take your order, serve your food, prepare the bill, mostly by just that person who takes care of that table. But in our situation, we have guests coming in, they're being welcomed and seated in our lounge. We take the order. Of course, we really have to emphasize the clarify if they have any allergies or dietary restrictions. And then there's a game. But that is done by one side of the team. Then that team will bring the guests to the dining room, whereas the blind team serving the meals. So we have two sets of service teams. And yeah, that requires a bit more staff.
With everything you've kind of shared in mind, that number of staff, how you recruit, the inclusiveness, do you have like an academy of sorts now? Kind of like when you have a new batch of new hires coming in, you have a playbook where
we definitely have playbooks with sets of SOPs, standing operating procedures. We have a nice file.
That IP is very valuable.
Yes. And then the team themselves, the blind team, they will actually take care of the recruitment of the training for the newcomers.
Oh, fantastic.
So in the beginning, we had the training period of about 3 months, but now that is shortened because they know precisely what they are supposed to do.
And how long does it take now for a
Because they can start working straight away, working with the team. So they are often in that particular dining room.
Okay.
As a guest, you have no idea that there's then a small battalion of people sitting around the wall,
right.
listening in and learning along the way, because you can't see them. Because they're there, they can already start performing some of the smaller tasks in the operation, so we can just get them up to speed in a quicker way, because there's already real-life guest situations from what they can learn.
Let's talk a little bit about your relationship as a Dutchman with Vietnam. You know, this podcast today is being made in support from the Netherlands Embassy. It's the 50-year celebration of the relationship between the two countries.
Yes.
And I'd like to kind of share or hear from your insights about how that's kind of led to your creation of the business. Because I think your business underpins some of the values that you perhaps
definitely
were raised with coming from the Netherlands.
Yes.
Including inclusiveness, social enterprise, those kind of
yes.
things. So I'd love to hear that. You've been here 20 plus years. How has that relationship evolved in that time that you've been here? What have you seen as a Dutch citizen living here in Vietnam?
I guess it's definitely getting bigger and larger. I think with everything else, with the trade, with the tourism, the relations are growing that way. Yeah, the level of the number of high level visits out of the Netherlands to Vietnam is I guess indicating as well how important the trade relations, the diplomatic relations are between Vietnam and The Netherlands. Mm. The Netherlands, it's a small country. It's only about 17 million people, but then to see the impact it has on the world stage, it's humbling. As I understand, the Netherlands is the biggest investor in Vietnam out of the European Union countries. Mm. The biggest investor, that's quite something. Bigger than countries like Germany or France, for instance. And it's the second biggest trading partner with Vietnam.
In the 20 years that you've been here, what kind of Dutch companies and people have you come across? And I only ask that because, you know, today's show, I feel like a lot of Dutch businesses and people, Dutch Vietnamese perhaps even, will be listening in and want to hear from people like you that have built successful businesses. Who have you come across over the years? And maybe you can even share like a little bit of advice for those thinking about starting a business. It could be a small one. It could be a big one.
Of course, a lot of emphasis always goes to the bigger players in the field, like Heineken or Philips, Unilever. There's a lot of, and of course, in their agricultural field, Dalat Hasfarm, Rijkswaan. There's a lot of those companies who really always take the spotlight. But there's quite a lot of Dutch people here with their own business, with small to medium enterprises here in Vietnam, whether it's a restaurant or a resort or manufacturing something. So it's nice as well. I'm quite glad with the consulate, the Netherlands consulate, their focus on just including every Dutch business. Although, am I a Dutch business? I mean, I'm a Dutchman in Vietnam with a business, but does that make the business Dutch? Mm. We don't really trade with the Netherlands or provide anything for...
You have a lot of guests from the Netherlands.
Oh, yeah, we do get guests. And of course, we participate in the service industry and hospitality and tourism in that way, yes. But it's not that we have a trading link with the Netherlands, of course. So in that sense, are we Dutch? Of course, focus from the consulate and the embassy to businesses like Heineken and Philips is it deserves in that spotlight. But it's nice as well that the consulate, and especially with the previous consul general and the current consul general, they really like to include the services for my business. And there's a lot. I've been asked several times to come to the consulate for meetings, events, for gatherings.
Well, perhaps someone listening here today will start a stroop waffle business.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is. So on that line, I definitely can recommend for people with a link to Vietnam to come here and start their own business. There's a lot happening. Vietnam itself is booming, right? It's the tourism is increasing. And if you see that the middle classes are emerging, there's a lot of more disposable income. There's lots of opportunities in this country. Mm. Yeah.
My next question is about the Dutch Business Association. It's quite small. I remember when I first came to Vietnam, I was surprised that such an association existed for a country relative to the likes of America and the likes.
No, it is.
But it's quite vibrant and it's out there. In your experience, especially with Journey of the Senses, having sustainability at its core, which is also underpinning the relationship between the two countries.
Yes.
How has that been able to support your business? Have you gotten business from that particular group?
Definitely.
Maybe you can share about that.
With the Dutch Business Association, the DBAV, they often organize events, gatherings, luncheons. And since we have restaurants, those gatherings sometimes take place at our restaurant, with a main focus on the vegetarian restaurant, Du Lu Sang. With the consulate, we have done several catering events there. One of the sections, actually the sixth business branch in Journey of the Senses, is providing catering options. We have done that for some very big fashion brands here in Vietnam.
Yes, I see you guys all the time. I don't even go to your see you guys anymore. I just see you guys at the events.
Yeah, no, it's some bigger brands like Hermes and Gucci, Louis Vuitton. Mm. But then, so we slowly started building that as a little bit like a fine catering services, very tailor-made. But then, since my citizenship, being a Dutch person, the Netherlands consulate likes to give their business to Dutch restaurant owners as well. So there's a few others, and we make a bit of rotation in that way, that once in a while, if the availability is there, we get some business from the consulate.
Yep. Got it. Yeah, speaking about catering, Minister Steinmacher visited November for GIFI.
Indeed.
A big Vietnam program related to sustainability and the environment. I understand you met her and at the residence that you guys actually catered. Could you share about the importance of these high-level delegation visits you mentioned over the last 20 years? How has that evolved and kind of led to some sort of impact about the core of the relationship?
Yeah, the Netherlands always has had a strong focus on trade and commerce and on development. The Netherlands is quite big in when it comes to providing development aid to other countries. The Netherlands has always had that very high focus on inclusiveness and non-discrimination. Actually, it's the first article of the Constitution is in the non-discrimination article where you're not allowed to discriminate on religion, color of skin, and the whole nine yards. So there's a very strong focus from the Netherlands on that. And then to have those high-level delegations coming to Vietnam, it really shows as well that there is a big link between the Netherlands and Vietnam. Mm. But then when my company, relatively small, is then included in one of those events.
Yeah.
It's humbling. It's nice to get that endorsement from and the consulate, and then indirectly from the government of the Netherlands. When a minister of foreign trade is coming and we have a chance to cater their events and have a bit of a one-on-one and share some thoughts, it's humbling.
Yeah.
It's nice to know that we have that endorsement.
So a little plug for your catering business.
Yes.
You guys do a ton of events, especially for the one at King's Day, I understand.
Yes.
So one of our friends in the F&B industry, Cricket One, it's all about sustainability as well. Biggie Nguyen, she's one of the founders.
Yes.
She's not Dutch. I believe her husband's
Dutch. Her husband is, yes.
I'd love to hear how you guys collaborate with other F&B brands, specifically that one.
No, with Cricket One, I'm always amazed with their business concept. I really applaud them. First time I came across them was when we were in Singapore at some financial funding event.
Okay.
And they were there. We were there to give a presentation, and they did a presentation as well. Their business is amazing. To use Cricket as a baking product, and it's very sustainable what they do, because the whole insect can be used. They use leftover from farmers, but they understand taro plants can be eaten. The whole thing. So it's actually helping sustainably other businesses as well. I really admire what they do. And then to make that Cricket into a kind of powder that is used in cookies or in bread that you don't even taste, admirable concept what they do. I like that. So we were indeed asked to do the catering for the King's Day at the Netherlands Consulate. Then one of our national dishes, the bitterball. It's a deep-fried meat ragout bowl. But then the consulate thought it would be nice to make a collaboration between our businesses.
I wish we had one right now.
Yeah, indeed. It would be amazing. Yeah. So the powder of those crickets that was actually used as an ingredient in that bitterball, we did the catering. They provided the ingredients. Mm. It was a nice cooperation. And then really to show, look, that multiple companies can provide just a food product, but sustainably. Yeah, it's nicely done.
Very good, Jerm. Well, that wraps up our main questions here. I always like to end my podcast with a question for our guests, which is, you're an expert in hospitality and F&B. And
I hope so.
I with decades of experience, I would hope so as well. Thank you for sharing everything, by the way.
Pleasure.
The objective of this podcast, though, is to share across all of society, especially the business community, insights about businesses that they might not know about. So my question for you, Jerm, would be, what kind of business or industry would you like to know more about so that we can invite them on the next podcast? I'd love to hear from you about that.
Especially
as an entrepreneur, you're thinking about what you're doing. What could you learn more that can help drive your business forward, or just out of your curiosity, perhaps?
Definitely would like to learn a little bit more about digital marketing.
Maybe dive into that a bit more, because you and your partner at the Journey of the Senses, you two don't know anything about marketing.
Well, I personally don't know well enough, and it really seems that these days the focus is definitely much more on marketing. Of course, you can do it through a whole broad range of media, but then now it seems definitely much more social media focus, so to get a little bit more understanding about how to manipulate the the social media surfaces. Social network surfaces. Now, that would be interesting to learn more about.
Okay. Well, in a place like Vietnam, that's very important.
It seems so. Yeah.
that wraps up today's podcast. Thank you, everyone, for listening and tuning in. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Yerim, today?
I guess I'm fine.
Check out Journey of the Senses and five or perhaps six of their businesses. Five locations on Haibochung Street, down an alley in Ho Chi Minh City. Go check them out. They're all wonderful. I've been a patron of all five. So
indeed.
Thank you so much for joining the show, Yerim.
And always a pleasure.
It's a nice way to turn back the timeline a little bit, I guess,
indeed.
7-8 years ago.
Okay, thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Always
see you guys
a pleasure.
Next time. Yeah.
You can also check out the video version of this podcast on our other platforms such as YouTube and Facebook. New episodes are out every week, so don't forget to subscribe to Vietcetera's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube channel for more interesting content.